our listeners will recall that Rav Baruch, where we're up to in our story, had become engaged, was seeking out the friends of his youth before he got married to learn even more about Avedis Hashem, and Pesach found him in the Bromzel by his friend Elezer Ruven, Rabbi Elezer Ruven de Smithy, whom he had spent time with earlier when he had studied in the Bromzel. There he got to know several of the son-in-laws during Pesach, as was his custom to spend Pesach by Rabbi Elezer Ruven. The three son-in-laws of Rabbi Elezer Ruven were there. The older two, who had studied in yeshivas in Minsk, which were not Hasidic yeshivas, were of one type of personality, while he also got to know Yitzchok Scholl, the third and youngest son-in-law, who was a Talmud of the Baal Shem Tov, although only 4 years older than Rav Baruch, who was then about 18, 19 years old. Yitzchok Scholl had grown up by his father, who was already a chosid and a Talmud of the Baal Shem Tov, and this was the first clear time that he heard about the Baal Shem Tov, and he began to hear about Teilas HaBaal Shem. Before he had come to the Bromzel, he was stuck at an inn for a time, and there too he had heard a little bit about the Baal Shem Tov. And it was during that Pesach, as we continue now in our 10th installment, that Baruch learned all about the greatness of Minsk and her scholars. He also learned about the important role that his own grandfather, who had lived in Minsk, had played there. Baruch suddenly felt a yearning to visit Minsk at the first opportunity. He, who had for so long run away from relatives, now felt a desire to come closer to them. He had a craving to learn more about his mother, who had died when he was still a young child, but whom he remembered as a very wise and learned woman. Among the many things Baruch had learned during his stay at the smithy of Rabbi Elezer Ruven about the world at large and about various personalities, in particular, not least, what he learned was about the character of his host. Baruch noticed how Elezer Ruven generally conducted himself at his work and outside it. Every Friday was the practice of Rabbi Elezer Ruven to close his smithy, winter and summer, an hour before noon. The peasants, who in the main were his customers, were well aware of this practice of Rufke, as they called him, and made sure they came in good time on Friday mornings with their jobs. Whichever of them happened to be at the smithy on Fridays about this time was always invited by the smith to a drink and a piece of cake. Let the peasants also appreciate that we have the holy and blessed Shabbos, he used to say. After everyone had departed the smithy, Elezer Ruven used to go to the baths, and on his return home would rest for a couple of hours so that he would be rested and clean. Then he would apply himself to the preparations for Shabbos in a manner worthy of the occasion. Elezer Ruven was tall and of very good appearance. He had a long white beard and always wore a happy smile, which added greatly to his charm. When he was dressed for Shabbos, having discarded his weekday clothes and his weekday cares, he made a most pleasing impression upon all who saw him. On this particular Friday, which was Erev Shabbos HaGodol, he had, as usual, stopped working fairly early and set off for the baths. He had taken with him his son-in-law's 9-year-old brother, Yisroel Chaim, who had also come for Pesach to the smith. Elezer Ruven seemed rather longer than usual, and when they began wondering at home what could have detained him, the little boy, Yisroel Chaim, came running in, looking upset. He said Elezer Ruven had sent him home to tell them what had happened. While they were bathing, they heard a scream from someone in the baths. People started running to see what was the matter, and found that the Rav of the town, who was also at the baths, had collapsed. Elezer Ruven and some others quickly got dressed, and while others tried to bring the Rav back to consciousness, the smith and his companions ran to the Beis HaMedrash to say Tillim and pray for the recovery of their beloved rabbi. They couldn't get any more information out of the frightened lad, so Baruch and one of the smith's sons-in-law quickly set off for town to see if they could get any more news of what had occurred. They found everyone very disturbed about the sick man, for everyone knew how important a person was the Rav of the Bromzel, and what a remarkable past he had. The Rav of the Bromzel was called Rav Zvulun Mordechai, who inherited his post as Rav from his father-in-law, Rabbi Gavaliel. He was greatly beloved in his congregation, and when the news got around that he had become paralyzed while in the Merchitz that Friday of Erev Shabbos HaGodel, everyone was terribly upset. Everybody prayed for his recovery, and while some went to the Beis HaMedrash to say Tillim on his behalf, others went to the cemetery to pray at the graves of his parents. It was almost time for lighting the Shabbos candles when word was passed around that the Rav had recovered consciousness and could speak, if with some difficulty. But his whole body remained paralyzed. As soon as the Rav could recognize the people around him, he sent for the Dayan, Rav David Moshe, and his grandson, Rav Shlomo. He asked that Rav Shlomo should deliver the sermon in shul on the following day, and asked the Dayan to help him with its preparation, for Shabbos HaGodol was an important occasion, and called for a very special sermon befitting the great day. The Rav also managed to make them understand that he wanted them to do him the favor of getting a minyan of Jews who should go to the Beis HaMedrash, ask pardon of one of the Sifrei HaTehillah, wrap it in a talis, and bring it to his house so that he should be able to daven with a minyan, which he said he had never missed during his entire lifetime. The Dayan and his grandson complied with the Rav's request and went to the Beis HaMedrash, and they took a Sefer Torah. Also, during Baruch's stay at the smithy's house for Pesach, Baruch had the opportunity to become acquainted with a person called Reb Chaim Shimon through Yitzchok Scholl. Reb Chaim Shimon was known as a person who outspokenly condemned each and every individual who showed any conceit. People, in the main, are generally conceited about themselves, even when they think they do not show it outwardly. And the people felt resentment against this Chaim Shimon because they always felt that the criticisms were aimed at them. Baruch heard how, when Yitzchok Scholl made his speech at his wedding, as was customary for chassanim, for bridegrooms to do, and everyone had greatly applauded, Chaim Shimon had risen and in his speech had said that while joining in the praise of the groom for a scholarly and excellent speech, he would warn him against allowing himself to become conceited because of his learning, either now or at any future date. For conceit was a terrible trait of man, and one should ever be on one's guard against falling victim to it. Many of those present lowered their heads when they heard Chaim Shimon's outspoken words, obviously disapproving of such candor and thinking uncomfortably that the speaker was surely referring to them. But the groom's father, the father of the chosen, who was a Talmud of the Baal Shem Tov, sitting next to the groom, bent forward and whispered into Yitzchok Scholl's ear, "My son, I like that young man. He is a fellow after my own heart. I'm sure he has a great future before him." The chosid within him told him that here was a potential follower of the new Hasidic teachings, which were about this time making themselves felt in the Jewish world. Teachings which were in contradiction with the line of thought as represented by the scholars present at the wedding. Yitzchak Shaul also introduced Baruch to another young man named Chaim Elia, the son-in-law of a certain Zalman Fishel, the Ben Yochid, as he was known, the only son. Baruch learned all about Zalman Fishel. It appeared that in reality, Zalman Fishel was the ninth child of his parents, and his eight other brothers and sisters were all living. The reason, however, for his very strange nickname, the Ben Yochid, the only son, was due to the fact that from his earliest childhood, he was extremely delicate. His parents were well aware of this and treated him as if he were the most delicate plant, which, with the slightest puff of wind, would be blown away and destroyed. Young as he was, Zalman Fishel quickly learned the advantages of accepting the role of a delicate child, and while his parents fussed over him so fondly, he fussed over himself even more. Right into manhood, he treated himself and saw to it that everyone did likewise as a delicate and only child, and so his nickname stuck to him all his life. He never as much dipped a finger in cold water, as the saying goes. And of course, he never did a stroke of what might be termed work. Until he got married, his father kept him, and after his marriage, his father-in-law kept him for 20 years, supporting him and his wife while he sat and learned. When his father-in-law died, and his source of income disappeared at the same time, he still did not attempt to do anything to support his wife and children, but left all the responsibility to his wife. Zalman Fishel might have become a scholar had he not been too lazy even to concentrate on his studies. And if ever he happened to pick up a Gemara, he quickly remembered some trifling task that he simply had to attend to, and away went the Gemara. One could always be sure to find Zalman Fishel nibbling at something. It would be either a biscuit, a piece of cake, a sweetmeat, or fruit. For of course, he was in the habit of assuring everybody he just had to eat something to keep up his strength, as he had a very weak heart. Another Schwachkeit, another weakness of his was, and this nobody could deny, was that he took every opportunity of davening before the Omud. On Shabbos Yontif, that was certainly understandable, but even an ordinary weekday was good enough to afford him his particular pleasure of acting as Shliach Tzibur, the one who led the congregation in prayer. No sooner came the month of Av, 2 months before Rosh Hashanah, than Zalman Fishel began to take what he considered to be the necessary precautions in protecting his voice. He would walk about conspicuously with a rabbit skin scarf around his throat. And of course, when Elul came, that was when he took himself and his voice very seriously indeed. He would drink endless cups of raw eggs beaten up with honey so that his voice would be smooth and sweet for the Yom Neroim. Whenever he davened before the Omid, he would not content himself with merely hearing the immediate remarks of those present, but wherever he went and whomever he visited, he would invariably ask, "Well, and how did you like my davening?" Or if it were someone who had not been present, he would ask, "Did you hear how I davened to the Beis HaMedrash?" He even went to the extent of tipping the attendant at the Merchitz so that he would say to the bathers, "Did you hear how wonderfully Zalman Fishel davened the other day? If only we had more Shluchei Tzibur, more people who davened like him." The Jews of the Bromzhal looked on Zalman Fishel as something of a joke and laughed either with him or at him. He had a way of getting on with people who found his light manner a pleasant change from the more serious side of life. He got on very well with his son-in-law Chaim Elia, and it must be admitted that he fussed over him as much as he did over himself. Baruch found that he liked Chaim Elia incomparably more than he did Zalman Fishel. Chaim Elia was a very friendly soul, was nice to everybody, but to scholars in particular. He was a gentle-spoken person and had a very pleasant voice to listen to. In addition, he was fond of cracking jokes, and while he did not talk over much, he always managed to quote the sayings of our sages relevant to whatever was the topic. Because of his father-in-law, Zalman Fishel, Chaim Elia was often included in the laughter directed against the former. But Baruch was discerning enough to recognize and appreciate that the many excellent traits in Chaim Elia, which a laughing manner and a peculiar father-in-law contrived to hide from the less understanding and therefore less interested people around him. The Baruch also learned from Yitzchok Shol that when Yitzchok Shol was 11 years old, his father sent him to the Minsk Yeshiva. He became such a zealous student that he earned the nickname the Masmid of Kharkiv, for Yitzchok Shol hailed from Kharkiv. Yitzchok Shol was most careful to follow his father's advice not to waste time on things of no real value, not to listen to gossip, nor to indulge in this common weakness himself. Rav Nissen had also studied in Minsk as a youth, and thus had made friends in that city, who now took an interest in Yitzchok Shol and kept an eye on him. One of these friends was Avram Abba the Baker, who, despite his occupation, was a great scholar. He used to say to Yitzchok Shol that unless one's Torah was based upon the fear of God and the love of one's fellow Jews, it was not Torah at all. He used to take the boy with him to meetings where there was a select gathering of scholars who came to discuss Avodas Hashem. It was at one of these meetings that Yitzchok Shol made the acquaintance of Rav Moshe Nissen, one of the batlonim of the Beis HaMedrash, one of the people that constantly found himself in the Beis HaMedrash, a man of simple habits and exceptionally learned. Apart from his thorough knowledge of Gemara, Rav Moshe Nissen was so well-versed in the Rambam that he knew it all by heart. All week he ate but the minimum of simple fare, and on Monday and Thursdays he fasted altogether. In addition to his extensive studies, Rav Moshe Nissen devoted a great deal of time to his Avodas Hashem, to his divine service. He used to pray at great length and apply himself to the study of Jewish ethics. He taught as well as studied Jewish ethics, and Yitzchok Shol was one of his willing and admiring listeners, being greatly impressed and influenced by all he heard. The result was that Yitzchok Shol greatly improved in character and acquired a burning love for his fellow beings. When Yitzchok Shol left Minsk and returned to his hometown, Kharkiv, he continued his studies under Rabbi Azriel Yosef, the local maggid, who also for a period conducted a yeshiva there. Rabbi Azriel Yosef, together with Rabbi Nissen and some others, had paid several visits to the Baal Shem Tov, and thus it was that the Baal Shem Tov's teachings reached Yitzchok Shol as well. Baruch, who was most interested in studying his friend Yitzchok Shol, was very impressed by him. He recognized that Yitzchok Shol was following a line of Avodas Hashem entirely original. Baruch had always believed that nothing was as important as scholarship, yet now he was becoming convinced that one's actions were more important still. His sympathies were drawn even closer to his friend Yitzchok Shol, though he did not know as yet that he was heading for the new school of thought of Hasidim. At the beginning, Yitzchok Shol was not too communicative about his thoughts and convictions, and he therefore did not divulge to Baruch the fact that his father Rav Nissen belonged to the new sect of Hasidim, nor did he tell him that he, Yitzchok Shol, had been brought up by his father along these Hasidic lines. But as time passed and their friendship grew, Yitzchok Shaul felt he could confide in Baruch and be frank with him without fear. So he told him all he knew about Chassidus and that his father Rav Nissen was a Chassid too and how it come about. Rav Nissen was born in Bobruisk, and when he was 16 years old, he was already one of the outstanding Talmidim of Rav Sholem Tzvi's yeshiva in the town of Bobruisk. From there, he went to Alusk, at which yeshiva he continued his studies for 4 years under Rabbi Yechiel. Here he made such excellent progress that he was able to enter the yeshiva in Minsk, principled by the Goyim of Poznan, at which yeshiva only outstanding scholars were admitted. Then Rabbi Nissen married the daughter of a nearby villager, recommended to him by the head of his yeshiva in Minsk. He lived at the home of his father-in-law in the village for 12 years, spending his time in Torah study in Avodas Hashem and divine service. Then his wife became ill and died, so he returned to Minsk, where he received a very warm welcome from his old teacher, Rabbi Yechiel, who had taken over the leadership from the Goyim of Poznan, both at the yeshiva and the Beis Din, the court. Even when Rabbi Nissen was in Minsk during his earlier stay, he had heard of a group of scholars who used to meet for the purpose of studying Kabbalah. Rabbi Nissen had taken all possible trouble to find out where they were, and after much effort managed to be admitted as one of them. Rabbi Yechiel was their rabbi. Rabbi Yechiel expounded the theory of Gilgulim reincarnation, saying that the souls of all our Tanoim, Amoroim, Goinim, and saints of all times, beginning from Adam, and including the souls of the Ovis and Yemois, the patriarchs and the matriarchs, as well as the Nevi'im, the prophets, and all the others mentioned in the Tanakh, the Talmud, and the Zohar, all were reborn and existed in persons living in our generation. Thus, he argued, through this reincarnation, there was a direct link between the generations of old and those of our present day. All the members of the group believed that Rabbi Yechiel had received this information through the prophet Eliyahu, who had revealed to him the secret as to which souls had been reincarnated and people living at the moment. Rabbi Nissen had been very greatly impressed by all he heard. He was still comparatively a young lad, while all the other members were married men, this being the rule for admission. An exception had been made in his case on the recommendation of Rabbi Yechiel, who had a very high opinion of Rabbi Nissen's mental perception. After Rabbi Nissen had married and gone on to live in the village, he had given up the study of Kabbalah, as Rabbi Yechiel had advised him that this study should not be undertaken unless under the guidance of an authority. Now, returning to Minsk after his 12 years' absence, he immediately rejoined the group of Mukubalim, finding that many of them had spread far afield, and many more had been added to this group who were studying the secret teaching. A few months elapsed, and Rabbi Nissen became aware that there were amongst the group some members who had adopted a new form of divine worship. They did not believe that the only way to serve Hashem was by devoting all of their time to study, nor did they believe that the correct way to serve Him was by afflicting their bodies by prolonged fasts and the like. They contended that it would please Hashem more if they were to show him that they rejoiced in serving him by doing all his bidding in a joyous rather than a somber spirit. Rabbi Nissen further learned that these members devoted much time to davening, before which they first went to the mikveh. They also made a special point of living simply and modestly, earning their livelihood by the work of their own hands rather than by the rabbinate. And even those amongst them who were rabbis dressed in ordinary working men's clothing so that they should be able to appear among among the workmen as members of their class. They could then talk freely to these ordinary, uneducated people and have them speak freely in return, thus having a much better opportunity of teaching them, influencing them, and inspiring them to take a greater interest in the Torah and its commandments. Many of these Hasidim would undertake various periods of exile, dressed like ordinary workers, and travel among ordinary folk in order to encourage and elevate them to a higher level of thought and a higher way of life. Rav Nissen was very interested in these particular Hasidim and became rather friendly with them. After a short while, he too was admitted into their circle, learning much more of their ways and line of thought. Much to his astonishment, Rav Nissen now learned that the group to which he had attached himself was only one of many such groups, all interconnected, and that the head of all these groups was a great tzaddik and Baal Mefus, a wonder worker, named Rabbi Odom Baal Shem. In less than 6 months, Rav Nissen had made himself thoroughly conversant with all the teachings of Hasidism as it appeared in its first form. This was the Hasidic school of Rabbi Odom Baal Shem, from whom Rabbi Yisrael Baal Shem Tov later learned the way of Hasidism and was crowned as the leader of the new movement in Judaism. And it was Rav Nissen, Yitzchok Shol's father, who trained Yitzchok Shol in the way of Hasidus, and so that Yitzchok Shol already at this time, when he was speaking to Baruch, was a fervent Hasid of the Baal Shem Tov. And what happened from here, Im Yirtzeh Hashem, in the next installment.